Welcome to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Hey, welcome again to episode 11 of the Press Box. I'm Zach Natto.
I'm Eric Fox.
And I'm Kellen Turner.
And unfortunately, we're without Lita this week, but we're going to be starting off with the Blackjacks' new signing and going to be diving into NHL playoff recap. Now, I'm pretty excited for this Blackjacks signing. It's Earl Callaway. He's a 6'3" guard from Atlanta, Georgia. He's played in lots and lots of games across Europe, Spain, Turkey, Croatia. He's played in the G League even. He's got 13 years of professional basketball experience under his belt. He's going to be an awesome, awesome mentor for the team. What do you guys have to say about him? I think he's going to be a real big player to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I like the Callaway signing. Don't get me wrong. At 37, you're looking more at a veteran piece than you are necessarily a star addition. But there are a lot of reasons to like this. You know, played at New Mexico State and Indiana in college, did play for a bit in the G League. But what you really want to look at with a move like this is the fact that he's played in so many teams overseas in Europe. I really like what the Blackjacks and the league really in general are doing of kind of trying to establish more of a European feel to the way they're approaching basketball. I really like this signing.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong with a guy that has 13 years of professional experience. Their GM, Javon Shepherd, was saying, he goes, Earl will be a great leader for our young players. His consistency and work ethic make him an important piece of our roster. So it's going to be incredible to have another veteran, somebody that has a lot of experience under his belt and someone that, you know, can score with some of his stat lines from college and from the G League. Having someone that can score in double digits on a regular basis is huge.
And the NHL playoffs, they are kicking off pretty much like everybody expected so far, with the exception of the Jets sweeping the Oilers 4-0. That was incredible. Eric, I know you're a huge, huge Jets fan. What was your reaction to seeing this?
Oh my God. Like, that was probably the most exciting series I've ever watched for any of the series that the Jets have played in over the last few years. But I mean, going into it, I had hopes that they would win. I figured it would be a long series. To go in and to completely shut them out from getting a win was absolutely incredible. And the first ever sweep for the Winnipeg Jets / Atlanta Thrashers franchise. So absolutely incredible to watch. But props to Darnell Nurse from that series. Darnell Nurse played 62 minutes and 7 seconds of time on ice in that triple overtime thriller. Not only that, but he literally played 62 minutes of hockey, and then as soon as the game was over, hopped on a plane, flew back, and joined his wife in the hospital, who was giving birth in time for the birth of their child. Like, absolutely hero. He's obviously built differently to be able to not be like completely exhausted and be like, I need to sleep and then I'll come back. But yeah, the Jets just amazing series by them, and I can't wait to see what happens next round.
Another disappointing year for Oilers fans, but I mean, if you're looking at McDavid, he's only 24. He's got plenty of room to grow. They have a great core, I think. They got Leon Draisaitl, Darnell Nurse, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Adam Larson, and McDavid. But going into the offseason this year, Larson and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins are going to be unrestricted free agents, so they're going to have to snatch those guys up to keep that young core. Game one of Montreal and Toronto, what a game it was. Toronto lost John Tavares in an injury that was scary, scary. I think everybody in the NHL was holding their breath watching that. Corey Perry took a beating from Nick Foligno. Didn't look like he tried to fight back. I think it was just one of those hockey things, you know, he needed to kind of take the L on that one. It was a complete accident, though. I don't think Perry did it on purpose. Unfortunately, you know, Montreal came away with that one, just totally ruined Toronto's mojo. Paul Byron from Ottawa had a nice game-winning goal, though, so that was nice to see. But tonight might be Montreal's last game in the playoffs. Toronto bounced back. They're up 3-1 now. Ovechkin, his playoffs hopes are gone as well. The Bruins, they've beaten the Capitals 4-1. Ovechkin is confident he's going to sign again with the Caps. He wants to finish his career there, so that'd be pretty cool to see. Despite missing a career-high 11 games this year, Ovechkin led his team with 24 goals. He's one behind Marcel Dion for fifth in NHL history. That, to me, is insane. What do you think, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, Ovi is just a scoring machine. And I mean, if he can play a couple more seasons, full seasons, 82 games, and score in that 40 to 50 range, I mean, he's going to be right there with Gretzky for the league title for most goals scored in a career. So, I mean, it is unfortunate to see them lose, especially to the Bruins. But I mean, hey, a 4-1 series win for the Bruins, a 4-0 series sweep by Colorado over St. Louis. So the 2018 and 2019 Stanley Cup champions have both been bounced from this playoffs. So we shall see. I mean, heading into Wednesday night, the Penguins and Islanders, 3-2 series for the Islanders. A bit of a surprise there, but the Islanders looked to finish that series off. Panthers and Lightning, the Tampa Bay was looking to finish off the Panthers as well. And same with the Golden Knights and Vegas. They were looking to finish off with the Wild last night. Unfortunately, when we recorded this, we had no idea what the outcomes were, but keep in touch for the next episode and we'll fill you in on the entire first round. But yeah, that Leafs Habs series, I didn't expect it to go that long. I mean, it's a 3-1 series. I kind of thought that the Habs were going to play a little bit better in at least the two games in Montreal, but they kind of put up some real stinkers down in Montreal. So we'll see what they can do tonight, if they can stay alive. And if they stay alive and they can go back to the Bell Center, they're going to have 2,500 fans in the stands for the game 6 coming up this weekend. So another huge, huge opportunity for the Habs if they can beat the Leafs in game 5.
Huge opportunity for the Leafs and the Canadiens, as well as the Canes and the Predators. They play tonight, with the Canes hoping to eliminate the Predators and make them go extinct. So don't go away. We got plenty more to talk about in the NBA and their playoffs. You're listening to Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
There we go.
That's much better.
That was much better.
That was just like...
Welcome back to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Welcome back inside the Press Box. I'm Eric Fox.
I'm Zach Netto.
And I'm Kellen Turner.
Now, Kellen, we know that you are our NBA, WNBA guru, so this is your time to shine. Tell us and fill everybody in on what happened last week with the play-in games and so far in the first round of the NBA playoffs.
So last week, we actually had some pretty impressive games. The day we recorded, we had, of course, game one between the Lakers and the Phoenix Suns. And this series is going to kill me, because I have said this before and I'll say it again. LeBron James is a person. Great guy. Love him. LeBron James is a basketball player. Not a fan. So game one, you know, we saw Phoenix take honestly a commanding lead. Devin Booker making his playoff debut, scoring 39 points. DeAndre Ayton getting a double-double against Anthony Davis. It was a very hard-hitting game until Chris Paul injured his shoulder. Now, it's not really quite clear what happened. From what we've seen in replays, it looks like LeBron James may have run into the shoulder while attempting a layup attempt. It was not good. Chris Paul did end up coming back to the game, but was visibly hurt. And you could tell he was kind of struggling and showing preference to the other arm. It didn't kill their momentum that game, but last night it was certainly hard to watch Chris Paul try his hardest to not have yet another playoff run ruined by injury. But the Lakers were just too good last night. The series is currently tied 1-1. LeBron and Anthony Davis got to business And the Suns, especially with Devin Booker not really shooting the best from the field last night, it was really hard for the team to get open looks. It's not looking great for Phoenix. I don't know what you guys think about the series, but I am not a fan of knowing LeBron's probably off to the next round.
Yeah, I mean, I would prefer Phoenix to win this because I'm just like you. It's like, as a basketball player, I do not want to watch LeBron James make it further in the playoffs again. So, I really hope that Phoenix can pull off the upset here.
Hey, both games have been pretty close competitive wise, and I'm pretty okay with this series going all the way. But yeah, I know, I agree. LeBron's won way too much. I think it's time for him to sit this one out.
It's going to be either a very close series or a very brief series. It all depends on how CP3's arm holds up. Hopefully they'll be able to bounce back next game. Looking elsewhere in the NBA, we've had some actually pretty good series. I'm not going to be able to touch on all of them, but I really want to talk about a series that I heard a lot of positive things about after the first game that I just don't know that I agree with, and that would be the Atlanta Hawks versus the New York Knicks. Now, I'm like a lot of NBA fans, I think, when I say I love seeing the Knicks doing well again. I mean, that franchise has been an absolute joke for the better part of the last 20 years. And to see them finally back in the playoffs, I mean, Julius Randle and Canadian RJ Barrett had been really good all regular season. Of course, Randle has now been announced as the winner for the most improved player award for this year. I really, really like this Knicks team. And I really liked the competitiveness in game one. So what's my problem with this series, you might be wondering? My problem is that Julius Randle and RJ Barrett looked terrible that first game. I mean, coming out of the first half, they were shooting a combined 4-for-16 on field goal attempts. And I will give credit to the New York Knicks' depth. I mean, Derrick Rose and Alec Burks are really carrying this team, helped make it a close game where Atlanta needed a game-winning shot from Trae Young just to win. But, I mean, I hate to say it, New York Knicks fans, but if Julius Randle and RJ Barrett can't get their act together, you're not going to win this series. I mean, you can't rely on Alec Burks and Derrick Rose to give you 26 apiece every game in a playoff round, let alone against the Hawks defense, which I know is shaky, but Clint Capella and John Collins really stepped it up, especially in that first game. I'm trying to have hope and think that maybe the Knicks can somehow pull this out, but I'm really not convinced. Before I move on, I just want to know what you guys thought about that Knicks game.
With the Knicks, I mean, you hit it perfectly on the head. You cannot expect that many points from those guys and not get barely anything out of a guy like RJ Barrett and that, because, I mean, those are the guys that are expected to score, and those are the guys that will help you win. If you don't get production out of them, you're not going far. You're probably going to get swept or at least lose in like 5, maybe 6 games if you're lucky. But yeah, I mean, it's nice to see the Knicks back in the playoffs. Like you said, they've been a bit of a dumpster fire for like 20 years. So it's nice to see them back in, and I hope that they can do well and that they can maybe get past Atlanta in this series, but it's going to be tough unless RJ Barrett and them wake up. Like, they just really need to just wake up.
Yeah, the Knicks have been the butt of almost every joke in the NBA for a while now. They're due for a little bit of a bounce back push, and the Atlanta Hawks beat Toronto Raptors like every time this season, so I'm ready for them to go home.
Now, I want to move on to a series just before I get into some other news that I think a lot of people were very wrong on, and that is the Clippers versus the Dallas Mavericks. Now, if you've been watching the NBA, you know that it's kind of been a running joke over the past few weeks that the Clippers are assumed to have tanked the last few games of the regular season to kind of avoid having to face the Lakers in early playoff matchups and instead to face the Dallas Mavericks. A lot of people had the Clippers winning this series, and I think I was one of the few who said from the get-go not to count Dallas out. And last night was a perfect example of why. The Dallas Mavericks currently lead the series 2-0, despite the fact that last night Kawhi Leonard put up 40 points, including 31 in the first half. And it's all because of their defense. You know, all series, all season long, all we've been hearing is the Clippers have the two greatest wing defenders since Jordan and Pippen in Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. And I'm not here to take away from that. But what I am here to say is that doesn't mean anything when your offense has no playmakers, a starting center who can't shoot anywhere outside of underneath the basket, Ivaka Zubac, and a defense who's letting Luka Doncic switch onto either smaller guards or slower big men every time down the floor. Tyronn Lue, this is a message to you directly. I get that you had your moment in the sun with LeBron James, Kevin Love, and Kyrie Irving back in Cleveland. But if you could run up like a single defensive scheme, that would be amazing. Because right now, all I'm seeing every time down the court is Kawhi Leonard's on Luka. They run a pick and roll. Next thing you know, Luka Doncic is being guarded by someone who's 6'1", which isn't going to work when the 6'6" Luka Doncic gets them down in the paint, especially not if you have him guarded by runs maybe 4 miles an hour Ivaka Zubac at the end of the fourth quarter. I just feel like Dallas is really doing whatever they want right now. Kristaps Porzingis put up a double-double last night. Porzingis hasn't been a consistent scoring threat all season long, and suddenly he's tearing off against the Clippers. I mean, it's a testament to the fact that if you are a Clippers fan, it's time to recognize that it doesn't matter how much talent your franchise has, you're cursed. You've stunk. You're always gonna stink. If they somehow turn this franchise around, I will be the happiest person ever, because I do still love Kawhi, but I think it's time for everyone to admit he should have just stayed in Toronto.
Preach.
I agree. You guys want to jump in on that at all?
I thought the Clippers were going to walk away with this one too, but Dallas is really playing like they actually have a game plan going into this, and the Clippers just looked like they wanted to just play basketball and they'd win this game. But no, yeah, Doncic, yeah, he's been unreal. I love it.
I think Kawhi should have stayed in Toronto. I understand why he didn't, but at the same time, I mean, I still think that, to be honest, if you're going to be a team that relies on two guys extremely like large, you're going to fail. Like you have to have a surrounding cast, a supporting cast. And that's what made the Raptors so special in 2019 is, yes, they had Kawhi and Kyle and everybody else, but their bench was huge. And if you don't have the bench scoring and the secondary scoring and even the third level scoring, you're not going to succeed at all.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's no depth to this Clippers roster right now. And that's their biggest problem, is that Kawhi's not a playmaker. Paul George is not a playmaker. And the only playmaker they brought in, Rajon Rondo, has not been stepping up in these first two games. I mean, I hope things turn around. I would love a competitive series out of this, but it's not looking good. Moving on from there, I got some exciting WNBA news. Following the New York Liberty, as I usually do, Sabrina Ionescu was recently named the WNBA Player of the Week. She is averaging 18 points, about 6 assists and 6 rebounds. I mean, Ionescu's been on a tear. There's a reason the Liberty have had such an extreme turnaround this season, having only lost one game so far, as opposed to their terrible record from last year. I know not many people probably are tuning into the WNBA right now. It's kind of hard to get their games, especially with NBA playoffs on. But if you have an opportunity, the Liberty have been tearing it up recently. Sabrina Ionescu alone is reason to watch the game. And there's a lot of depth on this team. They are one of three teams in the WNBA to have only lost one or fewer games, tied, of course, with the Phoenix Mercury and the Seattle Storm. And they're looking good. I mean, I would say right now the matchup you're looking for in the WNBA is the Storm versus the Liberty. I mean, Sue Bird is looking amazing, despite the fact that she's approaching 40, if not already there. And I think we're really seeing a good young class of players, specifically in Dallas and the Liberty, really start to pick up in the WNBA. So their first matchup between the Storm and the Liberty is happening, I believe, sometime next month. Keep your eyes open for that. I have the Liberty winning the game as Brianna Stewart's been dealing with some personal injuries off the court. I don't know if you guys have much to say on this topic, but the WNBA has had a lot of interesting games so far this season.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really had a chance to watch much of the WNBA, but I have been following it, and it seems like there's been some really close games with the occasional blowout thrown in there as well. But yeah, I mean, I'm interested to watch like how Ionescu can do throughout the rest of the season, as well as the stars that you know, like you said, Sue Bird, she's right up there in age, but she's still producing at a good level. And then for me, Canadian, you got to go with Kia Nurse, right? So checking out some of those is going to be really fun to watch for sure for the rest of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I do coach girls basketball. I think that, you know, watching the WNBA is watching basketball performed at the highest level, because, you know, it's a very skill-based game. There's less athleticism, but there's a lot faster movement. So if you're someone that's looking to get into basketball and you've maybe tried the NBA and you found you're too much of a purist, let's say, for it, the WNBA might be exactly what's up your alley. We got a lot of hot shooters. There's a lot of really, really good technical ability in the league, and I am very excited about this 25th season.
Yeah, Kellen, I can't agree more. I'm definitely excited to check out more of the WNBA and even some of the NBA playoffs coming up over the next week or so. Well, that does it for our second segment here on the Press Box. But stick around, because coming up in our third segment, we have a very special interview with Glenn Johnson, the Executive Vice President of the Canadian Premier League. Don't go away. This is the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Welcome back to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Okay, joining me today, I have Glenn Johnson, the Executive Vice President of the Canadian Premier League. Thanks for joining us on the show today, Glenn.
Oh, Eric, I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So just a few questions for you today. First off, for the listeners, can you explain what your current role with the CPL is, and what kind of stuff are you looking after for the league?
Yeah, I joined the CPL just about a year and a half ago. Well, actually, I joined on March 1st. Formally last year, and 15 days in, COVID hit. I joined then, but we haven't been in the office for about a year. So my role fundamentally is I'm responsible for all business operations as well as all of the football operations. So, you know, think of me as sort of like the chief operating officer, you know, the senior executive that's responsible for executing, you know, all parts of our business. So I report to the commissioner on direct, soccer, football type matters. And then we have a CEO, Scott Mitchell, that I report to on the business side and commercial rights side and sponsorship partnership side of things. So, yeah, dual role, but it's been amazing. We, we've got about 35 staff at the office, you know, very focused on putting on, you know, great domestic professional soccer. And it's been really exciting, actually. It's quite a bit different for me. You know, I haven't been in the soccer world. As you know, I came out of, you know, what we call gridiron football now. it's been amazing. It really has.
Now, touching on that, you transferred over to the CPL from the Canadian Football League, the CFL. What was your most recent role with the CFL in their head office before that? And what made you make the change from football to the other football?
Yeah, it's a bit of a longer story. I mean, I've been a technology guy most of my real working career, which a lot of people don't know. They might know me as, you know, a former CFL referee or, you know, working at the CFL in the league office and now at the Canadian Premier League. But I was a technology entrepreneur for many, many years. And my side hustle was, the professional football refereeing. So when I retired from the field, you know, from refereeing, that's when I went into the league office. And, when I left, I was the senior vice president of football operations. So I ran everything related to the operations of the game. I didn't have any business operations responsibilities when I was at the Canadian Football League. So yeah, I was responsible for everything from the relationship with the players and the player association, the product on the field, you know, recruiting, officiating, you know, everything to do with operating the matches, a relationship with TSN for broadcast and things like that. So it was a much more pure operating job, only on the sports side. And when I retired out of that, I went and did another tech startup for a couple of years, which was it's called Smooth Commerce, and it builds out food ordering apps. So we started that up. I helped them for a couple of years. It's got it into a good spot. You know, it's operating and doing very well. And again, I was just kind of relaxing a bit and trying to look for something to do. And then Scott Mitchell, you know, who you know, a very, very senior sport exec in this country, was one of the co-founders of the Canadian Premier League. And Scott and I were just having a coffee you know, that December. And Scott asked me if I'd like to come and, you know, help run this business and this project, which is a very exciting project. You know, it's the pathway to the 2026 World Cup, you know, was a huge, you know, motivator for me to try and help this business, you know, build another domestic professional sport league. You know, as your listeners know, we are the tier one, you know, professional men's soccer league in Canada, and to just build this again. And so I take my startup skills and my entrepreneurial skills, marry that with my sport and pro sport skills, and, you know, try to bring those together in helping this project succeed.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely incredible. So as a CFL referee for so many years, what would you say was your career highlight? Like, what was the biggest game that you ever did? What was the most exciting game that you ever refereed over the years?
Yeah, it's funny, Eric. You know, obviously I get asked that question a fair bit, and I'm probably most known, you know, for the Too Many Men game in 2009. You know, people have seen my face, you know, putting my hands on my head way too many times, in my opinion. But so I'm probably most known for that. But, you know, I was really proud of the body of work, really. It was 24 years, you know, 24 years on the road, 400 and some games that I did. You know, I was really fortunate to be picked for 11 great cups during that period of time. You know, there were great cups in there that were, you know, I thought some of my best work was done in maybe 2005, which was only the second overtime game at that time, only the second overtime game ever. And, you know, it was an upset. You know, Edmonton came in and beat Montreal in BC Place. And, you know, I think our crew had a great game that game. So it's really hard to pick a moment. I when I look back and reflect on this, it's really about the body of work over time. And being able to work with some great people from other walks of life that were doing the same kind of thing as me, you know, lawyers, policemen, firemen, teachers, you know, salespeople. Like, it was a really interesting situation, but our bond was, you know, officiating, and our bond was every week to get out there and get ready, you know, go on national television and try to be perfect. That was a goal we had, you know, didn't accomplish it very often, but... Yeah, but, you know, at the end of the day, it was, it was really just the body of work over time, I think, that I would reflect on.
Yeah, definitely. I know it was quite the career, and I was actually at one of the Grey Cups that you got to referee in 2007. So it was, it's definitely something that's amazing to watch, like, just the ins and outs of the game for a referee and for the crew, just trying to coordinate with everybody. Cause you think the NHL, there's two linesmen, two referees, whereas the CFL, there's such a huge officiating staff. It's definitely more intricate for sure. Now, the last question I did have was, you were part of the CPL last year, obviously, like you said, with the whole COVID-19 thing and the PEI bubble. How did the PEI bubble come to be, and what was it like in the bubble? Just the ins and outs of the bubble as it went.
It came about. Obviously, PEI was very interested in hosting us and invited us, you know, to come. We were looking for a way to get back playing. We went through probably, you know, 10 or 12 different options and locations. Lots of people put their hand up to try to have it come there. We went to PEI in the end, you know, because it was, you know, one of the safest places at that time in terms of the number of cases. You know, we were going to an island. It gave us a great opportunity to be sequestered. And they were very inviting about it. And we could make the economics work, you know, which was all very important for an early stage league. It was very important to play. And PEI just did a fantastic job hosting us. The players and coaches and staff, like everyone just acted incredibly responsibly, put on a great show for our fans. We used some very innovative technology around virtual reality and augmented reality that it looked like we were in a real stadium that was much larger. We were able to fulfill all of our sponsor obligations, which was critically important as well for our partners. It was a great, great event. We're very, very proud of it. Inside the bubble, it's challenging. You know, you're away from home for, you know, 7 weeks. You're in the same place every day. It's a little bit like Groundhog Day. You're waking up and, you know, it's the same, but you persevere, right? The other thing that I found is like, you find out what you're made of and that you can just persevere and accomplish a goal that's right in front of you. We got to get outside, we got some fresh air, you know, towards the end, we eventually got to go to the beaches, get in the water. So I think over time, you know, things relaxed a bit, you know, and I suspect, you know, with the vaccines kicking in and things, you know, this year and whatever we end up doing this year, you know, hopefully there's a little bit more freedom to do things. So, but no, the bubble last year was, again, a very unique experience that we're very proud of. We didn't have any COVID cases, any positive cases either. Again, testament to the people that were in the bubble and the way that they acted very safely and responsibly.
Yeah, definitely. And to have no COVID cases and to go through 7 weeks of daily testing and all that stuff, I'm sure it must have been quite the experience to say the least. But I mean, we all saw how well the bubble worked in the CPL as well as like the NHL and the NBA. So I think that heaven forbid there's any other pandemics that hit in the future, they'll be like, okay, do it in the bubble because it's worked so well the first time. So it's definitely a great idea. And it was something that I don't think anyone, let alone myself, would have ever imagined seeing like all the teams sequestered in one spot and playing for nobody. So it was really cool to watch as well in regards to, like you said, the virtual reality, making it look like I was like, oh man, they're in a big stadium. That's really cool. And then I realized that no, that it was like green screen basically. So
yeah,
it was exactly. It was really, really cool to watch. But anyways, that is all I have for today, but thank you so much for joining me. It was fantastic to be able to chat, to be able to learn a little bit more about your career as a whole. And hopefully we'll be able to touch base in the near future once the CPL season kind of gets going and you have more of an idea of what the CPL season is going to look like this year. Because I know a lot of people are waiting on faded breath, as they say, to see when Atletico Ottawa is going to be starting and where they're going to be playing and if they're actually going to be able to get to watch them in person for the first time as a team. So it's going to be an exciting few months, I'm sure, but busy few months for yourself, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Eric. No, we're very committed, you know, as we've said publicly, very committed to getting back to playing in our markets when it's safe to do so. You know, we've got some options in front of us, you know, we're considering. And we want to be back on the field as quick as we can and, you know, when it's safe to do so, right? And just a little sidebar shout out to Atletico de Madrid for their big win, champions. So hopefully that does, trickle down to Atletico Ottawa, you know, when they're back able to play in their stadium.
Yeah, definitely, because it's huge to have that partnership right off the bat with Atletico de Madrid and to be able to see them win the championship while the team's at training camp in Spain. So I'm sure they were able to enjoy some of the festivities, let's say, while the team's over there and dealing with everything that they're going through with training camp right now. So awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. My guest was Glenn Johnson, the Executive Vice President of the Canadian Premier League. And like I said, I hope we can touch base again soon once we know more about the season.
Absolutely, Eric. Yeah, thanks. And best of luck with the project. Take care.
And that was my conversation with Glenn Johnson, the Executive Vice President of the Canadian Premier League. Stick around and we'll be right back with our last segment here on the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Welcome back to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Hello again. You're listening to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9. We've talked a lot today about playoffs, and right now we're going to be talking about a regular season with the MLB and going into a little depth about the Blue Jays and the little slump they've been going on. But there's some positives to talk about as well, namely Vladimir Guerrero Jr. now leading the MLB in home runs. Eric, I'm as excited about you as you are about him every time he steps up to the plate. And it's great to see him still excelling, but his team is maybe falling around behind him. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, they had a bit of a rough week. They lost six in a row. It was not good, not pretty at all. There were some games where they blew leads late in games. A couple extra inning game losses against the Rays where, I mean, the one that I was watching, I believe it was on Monday night, they had a lead. They blew it. They went to extras. The Rays took a lead. They tied it, sent it to the next inning, and then allowed something like six or seven runs in the top of the 11th inning and then just fell apart in the bottom. So, I mean, it's been an up and down year so far for the Blue Jays. The big story, obviously, is Vladdy Jr. I mean, the guy is a beast. He's obviously, we've discussed this before on previous episodes, he has come in a completely changed man this year. Last year, everybody looked at him and said, wow, he's put on a bunch of weight. Well, guess what? He's lost that weight and he's put on muscle. He came in to this season and everyone was expecting him to play a lot better, but I don't think anyone would have expected him to already be leading the league with 16 home runs as of Tuesday night. Absolutely incredible. In that game too, on Tuesday night against the Yankees, Steven Matz returned to New York with his finest outing in 2 years. Vladdy Guerrero hit his league-leading 16th home run, like I said. And then just some of the other stories from that game, Bo Bichette reached on an infield single with one out in the third for the first hit off Corey Kluber, which is a 35-year-old right-hander who pitched his first no-hitter at Texas last Wednesday. So a huge game for them to beat a guy like Corey Kluber, who was coming off of a no-hitter, and to be able to have that big booming shot by Guerrero that drove right into the right field bullpen, giving him not only 16 home runs, but 41 RBIs already. The guy is on a tear, and I'm really excited to see what he can do for the rest of this season. What about you guys?
As someone who vaguely follows baseball, it's been kind of an ongoing joke for a while that the Blue Jays, you know, stink. And a lot of, you know, Americans will say that the Blue Jays always make these wrong draft picks. And there was trash talk about Guerrero Jr. forever. So just as a Canadian speaking, I kind of love that Guerrero is absolutely burying everybody right now. Outside of that, I really hope the Blue Jays do well. I think, you know, Canadian sports are a lot more fun when Canadian teams are doing well. So I like some of the pieces they've added. I know barely enough to know that most of the pieces have been quite, you know, beneficial to add. I just hope they can get more consistent and they can get some wins.
Yeah, maybe that losing streak was just so they can get used to playing in Buffalo. You know, the Sabres had that huge losing streak. So with the Jays moving to Buffalo on June 1st, maybe they just wanted to get acclimated to the city, you know?
Yeah, I think they just wanted to get that out of the way so that you don't have to be associated with Buffalo and losing streaks, because we all know there's been plenty of them with the Sabres and the Bills over the years. But I mean, for the Blue Jays, even with the win on Tuesday night, they were 24-23 heading into Wednesday night. So they're still above 500. They're 4.5 games back of Tampa for first in the AL East. But I mean, they're right there. There's only a few games between them and Boston for second, and them and the Yankees. So this series against the Yankees and the upcoming week ahead is going to be very crucial for the Blue Jays, because if they can start to get momentum, and like Kellen said, get more consistent, where they had a nice win streak. They won, I think it was like 6 or 7 games out of 8. And then they go on a 6-game losing streak. It's like that can't keep happening, because the more that happens, the more that it's going to be tough to make up any ground, especially when you're playing against teams like the Orioles, the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Rays in your own division. Like, getting swept by the Rays was the worst possible outcome after winning a couple games against Boston and then losing to Boston. So it's definitely going to be interesting to watch. I'm really excited to see what they can do, what can end up happening with the Blue Jays. And I mean, as of right now, they're 3.5 games back of that second wild card spot. So, I mean, a lot of runway left, but they can definitely do it if they can get on a run and start playing more consistently. But on that note, this is the moment that everybody tunes in for: the newly minted Press Box Playmakers with Zach. Zach, what have you got for us this week? How did we do last week, and where are we sitting on the year so far?
Well, we finished 2-2 again last week. We're 19-18 after 10 episodes, and here we are in episode 11. A quick little recap, though. Carolina lost in double overtime to Nashville, so that was a bust. The hockey gods told me that the Knights were going to make the Wild look like fools and to hammer the over, and they beat Minnesota 5-2. The bonus pick, I had Toronto winning and getting the over against the Leafs, or the Canadians, but they lost 2-1. And Kellen approved of our basketball bet, which was for the Wizards beating the Pacers with a plus handicap. And the final score was 142-115 for the Wizards. So we made that bet for sure. And then moving on to this week's Press Box Playoff Playmakers. Try to say that 5 times fast, but don't do it yet. Wait till I'm done reading these picks first. This week, our record is at stake. We only have 2 confirmed NHL games at the time I was doing my research, and the other 2 are going to be risky bets. We know I don't have the best of luck when it comes to basketball, but maybe last week was a step in the right direction. For the money line pick this week, I'm going for the Toronto Maple Leafs beating the Canadiens. I'm feeling good about this one. They're just about to sweep them. Why not? You know, they've got a better roster, in my opinion, and you can't lose at this point. Otherwise, Toronto fans are going to have less faith in you. So my money line pick this week is Toronto Maple Leafs being the Montreal Canadiens. And it'll be the first time they make it past the first round of the playoffs since 2004, when they beat the Senators, no less. So the over-under pick, I'm going with the NBA, the Phoenix Suns, and the Los Angeles Lakers. It's hard to bet so far ahead in basketball because the over-under lines change so much. But for me, this is the series to watch right now because all eyes are going to be on LeBron, whether you want him to win or not. And both games have been somewhat low scoring. I feel like we're going to see more of that in this one. I'm betting the under in the Suns and Lakers game. And for the handicap spread, I have the Nashville Predators with a plus 1.5 against the Carolina Hurricanes. While I think Carolina is going to be taking this series, regardless if they win or not tonight, Nashville will be fighting as hard as they can to get this win and tie up the series. And we've seen this year just how good they are fighting this way to the playoff spot. So my handicap pick this week is for the Nashville Predators with a plus 1.5 against Carolina Hurricanes. And for the bonus pick of the week, I've got the Toronto Blue Jays beating the New York Yankees with the plus handicap as well. I'm nervous about making this pick because the Jays just got off a bad losing streak, but snapped it against the Yankees on Tuesday. And the Jays have beaten the Yankees enough times already this season to get my interest. But throwing the fact that the Jays are pretty much guaranteed the underdog spot, being more than 2 games behind first place, but the fact that the Jays do well against the Yankees, and adding the fact that we can get a handicap bet on this one, it should mean that we get away with a win here. So my bonus pick this week is for the Toronto Blue Jays beating the Yankees with the plus run handicap. What do you guys think?
As usual, I think your NBA pick was very solid.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, in a way, think that the NHL pick with the Leafs beating the Habs, I expect that to happen. I kind of hope that doesn't happen and the Habs can get back in this series just to extend it a little bit further. Yeah, I mean, I think that the picks are solid, and I'm hoping that, yeah, the Leafs, the Jays, and all the other picks can come through for us this week.
All right, that's it for our Press Box Playoff Playmakers this week. Hopefully we get a nice 4-0 in episode 11. That's it for this week. Sorry Lita couldn't make it, but I think we still had a good episode regardless. Thank you, Eric, for getting that awesome interview with Glenn Johnson. And we hope to see you guys next week on the Press Box at from 12 to 1 every Thursday right here on CKDJ 107.9. I'm signing off for now. I'm Zach Natto.
I'm Eric Fox.
And I'm Kellen Turner.
And we'll see you guys next time on the Press Box. See ya.
Bye-bye. Take care now. Bye-bye then.